Hello and welcome to episode 497 of Connected. This episode is brought to you by Jam, Ecamm, and ExpressVPN. My name is Mike Hurley. I'm joined by Federico Bettici.
Hello, Mike. How are you?
Hello, Federico. I'm good. I'm good. How are you?
I am fantastic. Thank you. Wow. We're also joined by Stephen Hackett. Hello, Stephen.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
What sort of energy are you bringing to the show today, Stephen?
I'm pretty good. I gotta say, Mike's intro, pretty low energy, and he tried ramping it up at the end.
From! You want one of those?
Oh, wow.
How about that? Is that what you're looking for?
Maybe.
Yeah.
You could just, Jim could just put that at the start. Just that, and then it just goes into a low key.
Like that. Yeah. Follow up. We have some. A couple weeks ago, we talked about checking the Federate Our Threads Accounts box. I think we had all done it. And I had mentioned that I couldn't find my Threads account.
Misremembering. Only available for you in America.
Oh, I'm sorry.
For us.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, we'll do it. All agreed we'll do it, but cannot do it.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to be America-centric. America-centric American. I didn't mean to do it. I turned it on.
An American centrist, I think, is what you're saying.
A Macintosh centrist. No, it's a different thing.
There you go. Okay.
You guys know about the Macintosh centrist?
What are you talking about?
I have no, like, I don't know.
There'll be a link in the show notes.
No, okay. Okay.
And I had trouble finding my Threads account on my eWorld.social server, even though it was showing up on Mastodon.social on my test account there. It did eventually show up, and I followed it, and posts from Threads seem kind of hit or miss. I don't feel like all of them make it over to Mastodon, and there's always a delay, but like it's early. It is starting to work, and that is exciting. I still don't have any real feelings of what account I keep, because I don't want to manage two accounts that basically do the same thing. That's still all very much up in the air, but the wheels are slowly turning towards the federated future, and that's good.
Wow. I had a thing a couple of days ago where I was going to make fun of you on Mastodon for cross-posting and paused for a second and realized, I'm following your Threads account. I was so close to needing to be owned, but luckily that did not happen.
Yeah. Zach says the delay is intentional to allow you to delete before it federates.
That's good.
That makes a lot of sense.
That is good.
You know, as janky as some of this stuff is, there is a good bit of this that is pretty well thought out. Like, I'm not saying it's a perfect system, but things like that, like, as soon as you're like, oh yeah, why wouldn't you do it that way?
We mentioned last week that I was trying to install, like to get access to the EU stuff. And I forgot to mention that I got the All Store installation to work by simply swapping, as we thought, my American App Store account with my Italian App Store account. Right. So, there's just doing that in settings. It worked. I guess we'll see once like actual stores, they open up on the web. What happens if I install them using my Italian App Store account, then sign out from that and sign back in with my American one? Like, what will happen in that case?
Well, what happened? Did you swap back? What happened?
So, I did. It kept working, but also, like, that's a beta version of All Store that right. I manually installed using a .ipa file. So, I'm sure like that's not part of like the actual system that regular people will see. But also, like, for example, if you have apps on your phone that you downloaded using two separate App Store accounts, like, for example, I have apps that I download with my American account, but I have a few Italian specific apps, like, you know, the app for my security system, for example, that I needed to get from the Italian App Store. Now, normally, I am logged in with my American account, but today that app had an update. And it used to be back in the day that you had to manually sign out from settings, sign back in with the other account, and update the apps from the App Store. Now, I can stay signed in with my American account. But during the update process, the App Store prompts me for a password. And it says, this app was downloaded with this different Apple ID. Put in the password for that Apple ID if you want to continue updating the app. And I'm kind of curious to see if the EU, like if the third-party marketplace distribution will work the same way. Like,
absolutely not. It won't.
I don't think it will.
Because they are going to do, as we've seen from even the things that they've said, they do not want you to use it at all, right? Like, they just don't want anyone to use this. Mm-hmm. So they're going to make no concessions, right? Yeah. Like, the fact that apps, lose access to them if you're outside of the EU for 30 days, like if they're going to do that, then there's no way they're going to make any part of it easy.
Yeah, you're right. You know? Yeah, so... That's the update. That's the follow-up from last week.
I wouldn't be surprised if, you know how like on the show last time you were saying that like, you're going to lose your downloads from your Apple Music if you switch. Mm-hmm. I bet that happens. Like, I bet if you use your European ID and you switch over to your American one, those apps will be removed.
Yeah. Or just the icons will be dimmed. And it'll say you're not eligible to use this app or something. Yeah,
because they just don't want to use them. Do you have any impressions of Alt Store? Like, haven't used it?
It was. I really liked the UI, but because it was a beta version, a bunch of things were not hooked up. Like, for example, the Patreon linking system was not working for me, so I couldn't install a Clip because I couldn't link my pledge on Patreon with the beta version of Alt Store that I had. So I'll try again once Alt Store actually opens up, and I will report back.
Mm, very cool.
But I mean, the UI was very similar to the existing version of Alt Store.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
The jailbreak version, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's more data mining in 17.5, 9 to 5 Mac published. Quote, based on our analysis, there are identifiers that the next generation iPad Pro, which would be with OLED, and also there are identifiers for an 11 and 12.9-inch regular iPad. You know, what am I saying? iPad Air. That's what I'm looking for.
There you go.
I got there in the end.
You did.
I tried to truncate it and did a terrible job. Basically, they found reference to all of the iPads we're expecting. The Pros have OLEDs in them. In 17.5, which is kind of what we were expecting based on what Mark Gurman has said, where again, Mark is continuing to refine his prediction to say that he is now expecting these iPads to be announced during the week of May 6th. So that is a month from now.
Yeah. So I've done some math this week. I went back and looked at the historical patterns for iPad releases. So if Gurman is correct, during the week of May 6th. So based on what Apple did in the past, I think we're looking at iPad announcement on Tuesday, May 7th. With hopefully release on Friday, May 17th, which means if we extrapolate, we could expect a iOS and iPadOS 17.5 on Monday, the 13th, and press embargoes, I'm guessing, on Wednesday the 15th. And once again, this is just personal speculation based on previous patterns and sort of timing of previous iPad releases.
I think the only thing that I would potentially... you consider is that they're like order today, available Friday.
No, maybe. And in that case, if the timeline is accelerated, we may see version B would be iOS 17.5 on Monday the 6th, iPads on Tuesday, release on Friday the 10th, and press embargoes on Wednesday or Thursday, if that's the case. But last time they released iPads, they did with the order today, available next week.
Yeah.
So that's what I was predicting.
Automatic, the makers and stewards of WordPress. Is that an accurate way to describe that?
That's pretty fair, I think, actually. Yeah.
Because it's two things that are the same thing, but also not.
Right. Automatic also owns Tumblr and Day One and a bunch of other stuff.
And Pocket Cast?
Pocket Cast.
They have acquired Beeper for $125 million. Beeper Mini people, so Beeper have been making text messaging products. They also were the company that hired the high school student, I think.
Yeah.
Who had reverse engineered iMessage to create Beeper Mini, the iMessage app, which was available on Android. Automattic has acquired this company. They have acquired Beeper's team, including the 27 employees, the applications that they make, which integrate services like Signal, Facebook, Messenger, Slack, and also the 100,000 customers. That's all kind of coming along. So they're basically like, Automattic appears to just be like, we'll buy the company. Company says as it is. I was reminded from John's link about this on Mac Stories that Automattic had previously bought an app called Texts, which was a similar idea of like, what if one app but all your messages, which I think is actually a pretty good idea, and is potentially Automattic hedging against a interoperable future of messaging services, which also feels possible. More possible now than ever before, because it seems like it's something that a lot of world governments want to happen for good or ill. So I don't really know what to think about this other than Automattic sure buys a lot of companies, and I think $125 million for Beeper sounds like a really good deal for Beeper.
It does sound a good deal for Beeper.
Yeah.
And Matt Mullenweg, the founder, had this blog post about it, basically saying they have no interest in dealing with iMessage on Android. I think that chapter is fully closed. I've not tried any of these apps that like combine messages from multiple services.
I tried them. I didn't like them. Because I mean, it is convenient, but you're still losing like the dedicated features and UI of each of those apps. I don't know. It felt kind of awkward, you know, to use something that's like, hey, this is WhatsApp or like, this is Discord, but it actually wasn't.
Yeah.
I don't know. It makes me feel kind of uncomfortable.
My general feeling about these apps is the exact same feeling that I had about Beeper, like Beeper Mini. It's like, I don't believe that any of these things will work into the long term.
Yeah.
Because all of the companies of which you are building, they don't want you to do this. Like, even if there are APIs, right, that you're just using, none of these companies like want you to exist. They want like Slack and Facebook, and they want you in the Slack and Facebook apps. Mm-hmm. And so they're never going to make your life easy. Like, they're always going to be changing a thing, and then you have to try and respond to that thing that they changed because now the app's broken. Like, as useful as these kinds of things could be, I am never confident that they will last into the long term. So I just never want to get... I always try in software to not put myself in a situation where I'm going to be upset that something is killed.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, I try my very best to avoid those kinds of situations. And so I will rarely pick up something where I think, I'm not sure that this is going to last into the long term. And these kinds of things are one of them. I wish them well, because I think it's a great idea. And maybe, you know, after 5 years or something like this existing, like being all powerful and everyone loves it, then sure, maybe. But I'm always concerned about these kinds of software products.
This episode of Connected is brought to you by Jam. If you're a web developer and you work on a team, you know that sometimes your teammates send you bug reports with very little context, like maybe just a text description with no screenshot, no console logs, and no user ID. And instead of fixing it, you have to then go to the person who made the ticket to hunt down the right information, or go back and forth over the course of weeks sometimes in the ticket, commenting, trying to figure out if it was the local storage API, the response from a network request, cookies at the time zone you're in. It can go on, and it ends up being really frustrating when you're trying to figure out what went wrong. That's where Jam comes in. You may have heard of it. It's used by more than 90,000 people. And that's because it's a free tool that saves web developers and designers a ton of time and frustration. It ensures that your teammates make the perfect bug report every time. They literally can't do it wrong. It automatically includes a video of the bug, console logs, network request, all the information you need to debug, like even when it's something as simple as their internet speed. It even automatically lists out the steps you need to reproduce to encounter the bug. It's so easy to get your teammates to use because it's just a Chrome extension. They see a bug, they click a button, and right away it creates a ticket in your issue tracker. So it saves time for them, and it saves you a lot of hopping on calls and meetings to debug. If you're a web developer and you would rather spend your time writing code than responding to comments in your issue tracker, send your team jam.dev. That's jam.dev, jam.dev, or click the link in the show notes. Our thanks to Jam for their support of the show and Relay FM.
All right, guys, it is time for our weekly Teach Italian segment. I have a few things planned for you today, but before we get to those, we have some feedback from Roberto, which is the way you pronounce that name in Italian. I've been loving Teach Italian, but an unfortunate side effect is I had to turn off conversation awareness of my AirPods since they believe that I'm having an Italian conversation with Federico. I'm assuming that Roberto is speaking answers back. I'm not sure exactly what's going on here because
That's got to be the thing that's happening. It had not occurred to me that other people might be playing along at home.
Right. So they're literally like trying to repeat what you guys are trying to learn with varying degrees of success. I mean, Steven, you know. So today we're doing love you, Steven. So today we're doing a few things. First, we're gonna do the numbers. Finally, we're gonna count from 1 to 10. It's gonna be pretty simple. Most of these numbers are very similar to Spanish. So Steven, if you know some Spanish, maybe you will find some of these easier. Gonna start. So one is uno.
Uno.
Perfect.
Wait, can't we just do them like one?
Yeah.
Can't we do it? Every week we do them along with you. Why are you changing the formula now?
Sorry, I'm sorry. So one is uno.
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 Perfect. Two is due.
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 Yep. Three is tre.
Tre.
Mike, you're getting better at that R sound.
It's the Romanian, man.
I don't know how, but it's helping, I think. Yeah. So four is quattro.
Quattro.
Yeah, Steven, I know why you say quattro, but it's quattro. It's like, it's not tro, like you said. I don't know how to explain that sound. That sounded a bit American, but it's okay. You'll learn. I guess this is maybe the trickiest one. Five is cinque.
Oh, that's not what I was thinking. Because I looked at that the way you have written out, and I was thinking in Spanish, like where it's like would be cinque, but or like cinco, but like cinque.
Yes,
cinque.
Yep, that's very good. Six is sei.
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 If you recall,
what you say.
What you say? If you recall, say was also the meaning of you are from last week. It's the same word written the same way, but in this context, it's the number six. Seven is sette.
Sette.
Yep. Eight is otto. Like
otto.
The name. Yeah.
Like the automator's robot.
Like the, yeah, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Nine is nove.
Nove.
Say it again.
That's very good. Nove.
Nove. Nave.
Yeah. Kind. Yes.
Like Avatar?
That's Navi. What you say? I guess maybe the number 10 is also tricky. So 10 is dieci.
That wasn't what I expected.
Me neither.
Yeah.
I was thinking it was going to be dieci, like chi.
So the way that I said it is my Roman accent.
Okay.
In proper Italian pronunciation, and I'm going to try here my best, is dieci.
Yeah, you see, now we've got, see, this is dialect stuff, right? Yeah, because I, using what we learned a minute ago, I would
but
have thought
in my
it was
dialect, I would say dieci. You know, dieci. It's like, that's a slightly different sounding. Now just say dieci, and that's the proper way, and you'll be fine. So these are the numbers from 1 to 10. Now I want you to put together two very basic sentences. We learned, I am, you are, he is last week, and we learned the numbers today. So how would you say we are two?
Well, I think you gave it away a minute ago. So I think, I assume, if I'm remembering what you just said, it would be like, say, do
no,
you?
We are. We are.
So would that be voi?
Nope. The other one? Noi, exactly.
And then
That was the tricky one. It was siamo.
Siamo. So it'd be noi siamo due.
Due. So for example, you go to the restaurant and they ask you like how many of you are you on a table for? And you would say, noi siamo due.
Noi siamo due.
Yep. Whereas if you need to say something like, you are six in total. So
two?
It's not... All right.
Right?
So you are, so that's plural, and we learned last week that it was voi. All right?
Oh, okay. Yeah, voi. Voi sei...
Siete.
Yes. Wait,
yes.
What?
Yeah. Voi siete. You are.
Say.
All wait, right? But why would it be siete for six?
No, siete is you are.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, jeez.
Yes. Yep. That's why I picked this one because
voi
it's tricky.
Voi siete. Say.
Yes. 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 And in total, it's very similar. It's in totale. It's like very similar to English.
All right.
So how would that be, Mike?
Voi.
Yes. Siete.
Siete.
Siete. Se.
Yes.
In totale. Yeah.
Yes. That's okay. That's good.
All
yeah.
Right. That's hard. That's hard.
Yeah. I know. You'll get there. I also have a little, like very small bonus thing for today that I thought about. I wanted to teach you the proper pronunciation of the Apple executives on the leadership page that have Italian-sounding last names. So in English, we will be looking at Craig Federighi, Luca Maestri, and John, I'm guessing most Americans would say Gianandrea.
All right,
so the way you pronounce his last names in Italian is Federighi.
Okay. Federighi.
Federighi.
Yep. Federighi.
Federighi?
Federighi. Yeah, that's good. So I'm gonna save the tricky one for last. Maestri. So, you know, it's very similar to the English one, just with a harder sounding R. Maestri.
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 Yeah.
Maestri.
That's so good, Mike. You're making so great progress.
I'm good at just emulating you. Like if I hear you say it, I can just emulate it. That's what I'm doing. But.
John's last name is the really tricky one. Gianandrea.
Gianandrea.
Yes.
Gianandrea.
We would say like Gianandrea. We're like,
it's not Gianandrea. It's not Gianandrea. It's Gianandrea.
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 Yeah. Yeah. Very good. We're done. Again, it was a tricky lesson this week. So
yeah, it was tough.
Thank you. You're making good progress, and even you, Steve. Like you're also making progress. I think we are sort of something is unlocking in your brain. I think it's you used to really struggle with some of this, and you're picking them up faster compared to a few episodes ago. So good job.
Good. I'm glad you're pleased with our progress.
Yes.
So, Stephen, you were out of the office on Monday?
Yes.
Because you were going, like many Americans, to see the eclipse.
That's right. The Freedom Moon, as we call it.
Sure.
We don't call it that.
Is the moon free? Or is the sun free of needing to do all the work?
Or is Earth free from the sun?
That.
Finally.
That. It's going to be a short-lived victory, but yes, that's Yeah, so this is the second total solar eclipse that's been in my neck of the woods. Solar eclipses happen all the time, right? Like all over the world. There'll be another one in my neck of the woods in 2044 or 2045. Also comes across the southern part of the United States.
You'll be like 70 by then.
Not 70.
I mean, nearly.
I think I'll be like 59. Hang on.
Closer
I put it on
me and Federico.
I put it on the calendar. Let me see if I can find it now.
Yeah, I don't want to think about that stuff. That just makes me feel strange inside. I don't want to get old.
It's happening to all of us right now.
Nah.
I think there's one of these that passes over Spain first.
Yes, next year, I think.
Me and you can go if you want. We can meet in Spain.
I'll be 59 in 2045.
Yeah.
So also it falls on the anniversary of Greengate being fixed in iOS 13.6.1.
What? That's
it's on the same day. It'll be 25 years since Greengate was
fixed. I actually feel bad for you that that's on your calendar.
It's a repeating annual thing, you know?
Yeah, I feel bad for you.
If in 20 years you remember about Greengate, I am going to give you $1,000.
Okay. Well, it's on his calendar.
Yeah, it's a repeating. That's the easiest $1,000 ever. So
make a note that I got to give you $1,000 in 20 years.
Okay. On that day.
that so anyways,
would be up at least $5 by then.
Yeah. I mean, think of what, is it $1,000 in 2024 dollars? Because inflation would work in my favor over 25 years. It could be real money.
No, why would anybody agree to that?
I don't know how the
why
system works.
Why would anybody agree to an inflation-adjusted bet? Why would you do that?
So moving on from financial-related jokes, the eclipse was incredible. We traveled to northeast Arkansas to a little town called Paragould, Arkansas. It's normally about an hour and a half from Memphis, so we went up the kind of the evening before, hung out, and it's like a small town. Like the high school marching band was doing a concert down Main Street for the eclipse event. So saw that, had some pizza. Well, the family had pizza. I sat there looking sad at pizza. And the next day went to a small city park to view the eclipse. And it was incredible. The one in 2017 was amazing. This definitely lived up to my memory of it. It is really something else. Like Memphis had 98% coverage. The extra 2% really matters. Going to totality is a totally different thing.
I love that. Like, that's not enough for me. 100 or nothing.
100 or nothing. I'm going to stay inside, you know? I'm going to stay in my Vision Pro and not watch totality.
If it's 98, can you look at it?
No. So you have to wear the glasses.
Said who? You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, yeah. I saw a thing on Threads today of like Google searches for my eyes hurt have been off the charts, so... A lot of people maybe screwed that up. You have to wear the glasses.
Whatever. YOLO.
Yeah. You only
typical Joe Biden. You know what? You know what I mean? He won't even let me look at the sun when I want.
I mean, Trump looked directly at it, and he's
exactly, and he's fine. If there's one guy we can all agree is totally fine, is Donald Trump.
Joe, don't look at the sun.
Yeah, it's big lens. They want you to buy those lenses. You know,
this is the Jeff Bezos thing. You know, yeah, everyone's buying their lenses.
Actually,
on
this is not going to help y'all's conspiracy theorying. But there's a company in Memphis that makes most of them. So.
Oh, yeah, here we go. It's big Memphis money.
It's big Memphis, you know.
This
they
is what
want
happens
you.
When your uncle's the mayor, you know, you just
Yeah, I want you to think that with all these websites, you know, they're all part of the same group, all these quote-unquote journalists, yeah.
Wow. Okay,
what do you think a style guide's for? You know what I mean? It's so everyone says the same stuff. That's the problem with mainstream media.
Yeah,
today.
I don't get the news from the internet. I got my news from Telegram, you fools.
Wake up, sheeple.
You sheeple.
Come on. The moon's for looking, you know?
It's weird. You wouldn't think that something like an eclipse would be possible. since the earth is flat, but it is.
I know, right? I know, right?
I genuinely had someone in my life, not a family member, but someone who's in my life, say to me a couple of days ago, you know, they have some points.
Oh, no.
I was like, no, come on, please. No. Don't. I'm like, God. Please don't.
I'm so jealous. I really want to have, like, in my circle of, like, acquaintances, at least, like a flat earther.
You don't
because
want
I feel
it.
Like, I feel like I would go out for drinks with that person and get so hammered and
you
have a good
it.
Laugh listening like, at I, those I, theories.
He's a guy, he's like, he, you know, he's... I will say conspiracy susceptible, right?
Oh, nice.
And like some of the stuff that we talk about, like I entertain his conversations and I just kind of want to see what he's thinking about and we talk and da 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 da. And like some of the stuff that he talks about, I'm like, all right, like I can see. Yeah, do you remember a number of months ago there was that train crash somewhere in America, Stephen?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Right?
In Palestine, Ohio or something?
Yes, and he was the first person to alert me to this having happened. I don't know how that was the case, but he was. And then like later that weekend, I saw a John Oliver thing about it. And he was like saying something along the lines of like, you know, like they don't want people to talk about it and da-da-da-da-da and like what is it? And like you hear those kinds of things and you're like, as far as conspiracies go, I can understand somebody feeling that way about stuff like that, where like where it would be preferred for these kinds of things to be covered up because of the fact that the railway companies have done such a terrible job of maintaining that infrastructure. So you can understand at least the railway companies wanting to cover something like that up, right? So like those kinds of things, you're like, all right, okay. Like I can see why such a thing is enticing enough to you that you could imagine there being a conspiracy, because there are definitely people in the world who want that to be a conspiracy for their own ends. Like they want things to be conspired against. But the flat earth thing, I was like, no. I was saying to him, like, look, here's the thing I want you to think about with this one, right? I said to him, it's like the type of the thing about the flat earth stuff is that, because he's like, you know, they have some points, da, 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 like you don't know about. I was like, these people will say anything to try and make you believe them, right? Because he's like, I'm like, all right, so why has nobody ever taken a picture of this big ice wall that runs around the edge of the earth, right? And
incredible.
He's like, well, no one's ever gotten a good picture of the earth from space. And I'm like,
what?
I'm like, no.
Dude.
All right, look, Federica, you just got to gut roll me on this, all right?
I'm so jealous that you know one such
person. No, you're not jealous. You're not.
No, I am. I absolutely am.
You don't want this. You don't
want
this.
Oh, no, I do. I do. I want to have a
You do? But then when it's someone you care about, it's like, well, I'm losing you now.
Is it Casey?
And no. I say it's you don't know this person. Like, you don't know this person. You've never met this person. You probably never will meet this person. Not for this reason.
Introduce
because
to
there's
this
a conspiracy
person,
and I won't allow
to the
it to happen.
Show.
Please, I'm begging conspiracy. You. Introduce me to this person.
No, because he's a nice guy. And like, you know, he spends too much time on Reddit. Like, everyone has this person in their life. And like, I, you know, whatever. And yeah. And so it's just like, I hear him. It's like, look, I understand why you feel this way, because these people are really good at arguing their points. And like, that every point that you make, they have a counterpoint where, like, if you're susceptible, then they're just going to keep making their point back at you, because this is all they have, right? The flat earth people is just to be able to argue the point against you. And they won't accept if logic is taken off the table, anything's possible. Right. And like, that's the thing about these conspiracy people. They don't, you're trying to argue them with logic, but they don't want logic. And so they're powerful.
They want Adobe Audition.
Indeed. I don't remember how we got to this.
Does he think that 9/11 was an inside job?
We've not had that conversation, but
interesting.
Well, ask now him you know what to bring that, up next time you see him.
Ask him if he thinks that steel beams don't melt. Ask him that.
Okay, moving on. The eclipse was incredible. It gets darker and darker, and then it like clicks into place and like the street lights come on. But the freakiest thing is how cool it gets outside so quickly. Like, you wouldn't think like 3 minutes of basically it being nighttime would make the temperature drop the way that it does. But it gets chilly. Like the temperature drops. When it's in totality, you can take off your glasses and see around the edges of it. You can see pictures online of like little, I think they're called prominences, but it's basically like big arcs of fire coming off the sun that expand beyond the edge of the moon. You could see those in some of those pictures. There's also an interesting story here where there's this picture that's floated around. You've probably seen it on social media where the shadows are brought way up so you can like see the moon's features and the sun behind it. And people are like, the James Webb telescope took this. The James Webb telescope did not take that. The telescope is not where it can take that picture. That picture is probably, that picture is generated somehow, either AI or someone doing multiple exposures. Like it's not what it says it is, but really enjoyable, really a special moment with the family. And then the hour and a half trip took 6.5 or 7 hours to come home. And my tech angle here is I was using Apple Maps initially, and it kept getting me off the interstate to go down like a side road for like a mile, then back on the interstate. Like it just couldn't figure out what it wanted because traffic was so bad. Because in this part of the country, there's only a couple of places to cross the Mississippi River. And so a lot of people flew into Memphis and then drove into Arkansas, the next state over where totality was. And so traffic was just unbelievably bad. And I switched to Google Maps at some point. It's like, hey, Apple Maps is freaking out. Try Google Maps. Google Maps eventually took me and thousands of other people, because I was in bumper-to-bumper traffic for hours, down a gravel road in Arkansas at some point to like avoid part of the highway. That was an adventure. But we made it home, and it was a lot of fun. If you get a chance to see one of these things, it is well worth it. Take the time from work, and if you have to travel and can make it work for you, it is really cool.
Did the kids enjoy this stuff? Like
they do.
Do they? They find it cool too.
They do find it cool. The older two remember the last one in 2017, but our youngest was only 3 years old then, so he remembers the trip, but doesn't really remember, you know, kind of what we were doing. So he was really into it, and you know, they were all like, you know, kind of freaking out at how it gets dark and cool. And, you know, you see the sky kind of in this way that you don't see it every day. There's an old episode of Liftoff. I think it's Liftoff 50,
such a good episode.
54. It is I'll 54. It. Where Jason and I both traveled for it last time and then recorded audio during the eclipse and then talked about it the next day. That's a really good episode that you should go check out.
I have a tech angle as somebody who did not experience the eclipse, of how the iPhone ruins the eclipse, or like what people say about the eclipse, because people post pictures or they send pictures to me and like, look how dark it is, but it looks like daylight because the iPhone, right, is the night mode, right? It's like, look how dark it was. It just looks like the early afternoon. Like I don't know what you're supposed to be showing me, but the night mode photo is not helping you in this scenario, because it was, I think you sent a picture of the kids, it's just like, it just looked like daytime.
Yeah.
It's just like, it doesn't look like anything.
Yeah, what's weird about that picture, you. It's a night mode picture taken at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you know.
Yeah,
but it is cool. I mean, you know, people, like even I did it, you know, I took a photo with my phone through the eclipse glasses. It's one of those things where like I did a couple of those, but like I wanted to kind of experience it. I was like, I can go download a wallpaper later from NASA. So I don't really have the gear to shoot something like that. You have to be pretty careful not to blow up your stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because you're shooting into the sun. Like you gotta.
Yeah, but I could take pictures of the sun all the time on my iPhone. It does a great job. You know?
Do you want to know where the word eclipse comes from?
Please.
Latin.
So it's from Greek, ancient Greek. Greek. So it was from the verb, pardon me if I get the accent wrong, eklepo. And the word was eclipsis. Eklepo, the verb, means to abandon. And the meaning was the basically missing, sort of like the sun abandoning the sky. That's why it's called an eclipse.
Can you imagine the first people that saw this happen?
Yeah. All the, that the was like left us.
But like now you can see our guests there, right? Because they're like, yeah.
Oh, the sun, come back.
Where's it gone? And then it comes back. It's like, whew. Yeah. That was worrying for a second there.
Yeah.
Very cool. Very cool.
Federico, you shared this Reddit link with us the other day about it's like these two guys fishing and they have eclipse glasses on a fish.
That is totally my kind of energy and vibe. Like those two guys, the guy who put the sunglasses on a fish and sort of like he's holding up. Please find, yes. So he's just holding up a fish to make him enjoy the eclipse. I'm just having a good time.
One of the top comments, Blinding Nemo.
But you know what's so great about this is that guy loved that fish so much, he sacrificed his own eyes.
Yeah.
He did.
Yeah.
The guy who's holding the fish took his glasses off and put them on the fish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Love it.
Blinding Nemo.
Blinding Nemo.
sees the eclipse while suffocating. This episode of Connected is brought to you by Ecamm. Ecamm Live is the leading video production and live streaming studio built for macOS. Ecamm does all aspects of video, not just live streaming. It's perfect for simplifying your workflow. It's easy enough to get started quickly, but powerful enough that you can create just about anything with video. And you do it all within the Ecamm app. I love how built-in Ecamm feels. It has access to a bunch of really cool stuff in macOS that makes it really easy to manage these types of projects. So whether you're streaming, recording, podcasting, or presenting, everything you need is there in Ecamm, including support for multiple cameras and screen sharing with a live camera switcher that lets you direct the show in real time. Stand out from the crowd with high-quality video. Add logos, titles, lower thirds, and graphics. Share your screen, drop in video clips, bring on interview guests, use a green screen, and so much more. Ecamm Live simply does it all. Their members are entrepreneurs, marketing professionals, podcasters, educators, musicians, church leaders, bloggers, and content creators of all type. So get 1 month free today by going to ecamm.com/connected. That's E-C-A-M-M, ecamm.com/connected. And the code connected will get you 1 month of Ecamm Live for free. So go there now, check it out, ecamm.com/connected. With code connected. Our thanks to Ecamm for their support of the show. All right, let's talk about other unworldly things. Emulation in the App Store.
To everybody that says that regulation cannot bring about competition and innovation, this is an example of how you're wrong.
Some people say that?
But yeah, I think people say that, right? I feel this is one of the things that people say. These days, like there are lots of takes, like a lot of the time. This is one of them. There are too many takes. Regulation would stop any form of innovation. Like if you have governments telling companies what to do, there's da 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 da. Well, this is a scenario where I think Apple seemed so concerned about the possibility of people wanting to install AltStore in the EU that they have changed the guidelines of the App Store to allow for emulator apps to exist worldwide, specifically retro game console emulator apps. We'll get to that in a minute. And also another part of it, you are responsible for all such software offered in your app, including ensuring that such software complies with these guidelines and all applicable laws. That second part to me is purely so Apple can wipe their hands of any situation in court.
Yep.
They don't care. Really for me is the retro game console part. That is why I'm intrigued about is like,
yes,
what is deemed as retro, and that's going to be very interesting to see how and when these first apps start getting submitted to the App Store if they haven't.
So I think a pretty good rule of thumb would be, for example, in the case of Yuzu, like is this emulator for a console that is right now on sale? Like is it an object that you can go to a Best Buy or something and purchase? And Yuzu was, I mean, it was emulating the current Nintendo system. And so obviously that was not even like a gray territory. Like it was just, you know, it was a risk and it was very risky. And the Yuzu folks knew that it was risky. But is a Game Boy Advance a retro game console emulator? Yes. Is a Sega Game Gear a retro emulator? Yes.
Well, here's what I'll ask you, though. What about the fact that you can buy these games on the Switch?
That's where it gets tricky, right? Because, and it's not just Nintendo. It's even companies like, Microsoft, they have an entire division dedicated to making sure that you can purchase those old Xbox One games and play them in 4K on your current Xbox. PlayStation.
Xbox 360 games.
Yeah. PlayStation, they let you download PS4 games and play them on PS5. So it gets kind... It is tricky to answer. But realistically, you know, I think, you know, it's one of those things where you'll know it when you see it. Like an arcade machine emulator, that's probably going to be fine. A Game Boy emulator, that's going to be fine. A DS emulator, probably fine. A 3DS emulator, probably not. Like, I think there's going to be a recency bias applied here. Like, is this console kind of recent so that it may be tricky to accept it in the App Store? I think that's sort of the kind of thing that we will see. But also, as we spoke about a few episodes ago, the law surrounding emulators, it's complicated, right? We discussed like all the legal precedents that exist in terms of like fair use when it comes to emulators that try and replicate the BIOS of a console versus emulators that don't include the BIOS at all. And they ask you to provide your own BIOS file. Like, for example, there's a bunch of PS1 emulators or Nintendo DS emulators that ask you to bring your own firmware and bring your own BIOS file if you want to use the emulator. So I think we will witness amazing things, I hope, because of this change. And my hot take for the day is that the European Union, long term, it will go down in history as one of the best things that ever happened to Apple and the App Store. But most American bloggers right now, they're too short-sighted to see it. And so this is just one example of regulation actually helping competition and helping Apple realize that maybe some things are okay for the App Store. So that's my take.
Here's something I can't wait for it to happen. And I really hope that this happens and we hear about it. The first emulator that gets rejected for the app doesn't do anything.
Because it doesn't have games.
Because it doesn't have games.
Yeah.
But you have to be responsible for the games inside of the app. But what if you don't make it? Game Boy game. I'm very excited for when that inevitably happens, because that's a rule, right? Like, it's a thing. Mm-hmm. Your app has to be functional. Well, an emulator cannot be functional until the games are in it.
Yeah.
But then Apple's going to be like, well, you have to be responsible for the games inside of the app.
Checkmate.
I think, I don't think Apple is stupid, right? And I think what they will do here is they will take a look at what's going to be successful via third-party marketplaces in the European Union. And because they will see the numbers. They will see the interest from people. And I think it would be silly not to think, well, if X millions of people are signing up for an alternative marketplace and they're downloading, they're seeking these sort of experiences, Why don't we just change the App Store in such a way where the developers are actually incentivized to bring those experiences to the App Store? And so in return, we're still going to make money, you know? And so they will probably use the all this EU stuff as a way to gauge interest for certain types of experiences that are not allowed on the App Store right now. And emulators are just the first shoe to drop, so to speak. I think we're going to see more and more of these kinds of things.
I think of all of the types of apps that they could have offered, like, this is maybe the most ridiculous in the sense of like Apple's history and the things that they have done and not done, right? Because you've got that one thing I just mentioned, right? Like, the apps have to be functional. Well, they can't be functional just inherently based upon what they are. Don't forget, this was a company until like 3 or 4 months ago wouldn't allow for a game streaming app to exist because Apple wanted to approve all of the possible games that could run. Uh-huh, and now they're like, emulators, sure. Yeah, of course. Like, it's also, and also just like, it feels to me like realistically, for Apple's perspective, just an unnecessary set of legal trouble to get themselves into. Like, Nintendo will 100%, without a shadow of a doubt, as soon as the first Nintendo emulator is on the App Store, send cease and desist to Apple. They will do that.
Will and then they, what happens? Have they sent cease and desist to Google? Have they sent them to Google on the Play Store?
Much love to Google, right? Apple's a different. It's just different.
We'll see.
Apple's just different. Like, they are. And because it will... Here's the thing, right? Like, emulators exist for Android and have existed for a long time. It's going to be a big friggin' deal when there is a Nintendo 3DS or Nintendo DS emulator for the iPhone.
Dolphin emulator for the GameCube and Wii on an iPhone from the App Store. I am living for that moment.
Yes,
to
but
happen.
You know, this is the thing. When that happens, it's going to be a big deal, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Nintendo, who is a partner of Apple's.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I am very intrigued for what is going to happen for when or if this inevitably happens. Because it's all just so strange to me. Like, this is the first thing where they're like, oh, okay, emulators, all right.
And I don't get it how some people cannot love this chaos right now. Like, it's amazing. Like, what we are witnessing,
mm-hmm.
I think. Like, I don't know how some people don't like this. It's incredible. Like, this remaking of the App Store under our very eyes. It's fantastic. I love it.
Well, I mean, it would be easier to love if all of these changes were worldwide, which they're not.
Yeah.
Right? Like, this is an easier thing to enjoy if all this stuff could be done. And it was also just done in a way where a lot of people could actually take advantage of it. Like, most Europeans aren't even going to be able to take advantage of the stuff because most developers won't opt in for this stuff because Apple's still resisting as much as they can to make this a thing that developers will want to opt into. Like, there are scenarios where this could be loved more if it was done better.
We have some more Apple and AI news. We'll start with some anonymous feedback on the Realm model, which we spoke about last time, to understand the context of what a user is doing based on what is on screen. Anonymous writes, "We do know the size of the models used by Apple in their Realm paper. They used a previously released LLM at different numbers of parameters, 80 million, 250 million, 1 billion, and 3 billion, and then fine-tuned the model with their desired use case." Those are listed in Table 3. I think I just missed them when I wrote that paper. For context, GPT 3.5 from OpenAI uses 175 billion parameters, while GPT 4 is rumored to use 1.76 trillion. So
that's a bit more.
It's a bit more. You know, a bit more.
Yeah.
A bit more.
Parameters, am I right?
You know, yeah. How do they work?
They're a thing. Yeah, I don't know. The more you have, the better. So, yeah, cool.
And then we learned more this week about Ferret UI. This is related to the Ferret model, which we spoke about on a previous episode. This looks at screens of user interface and to execute open-ended instructions. So this kind of stands on the shoulders of the other stuff we've spoken about. Finn Voorhees was talking about this on Mastodon. And Federica, you had a very funny quote post, one way or another, it always goes back to GUI scripting in the end.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting that, you know, we took this long trip around all kinds of automations, and then we're going to circle back to the idea of, well, what if the computer could control the interface? What if a system could control the interface of your computer? And so it used to be that back in the day, you put together these kind of janky Apple scripts, you know, to simulate clicking around the screen and have this visual automation going on. And, you know, tons of people still do that using tools like Keyboard Maestro or Automator or AppleScript. You know, this idea of every UI element on macOS tends to be individually addressable by a script. And so you can do things like open settings and click on this icon and then click on this tab and then open a checkbox and then scroll down. And here to see these examples of Ferret UI using machine learning and AI to train a model to use an interface, and in this case, the Shortcuts app. I think it's very fascinating that we're ending up where sort of where it all started, right? I think it's interesting. And I don't want this to sound like I'm making fun of this idea, because I think it's such an incredible technology. And visual automation, UI automation is something that I have used myself a lot of times when there was no native, for example, AppleScript dictionary or shortcuts integration for something that I wanted to do on macOS. And I also think it comes with some seriously powerful accessibility potential. Yeah. Like the idea that you can empower folks with motor impairments or vision impairments to actually do something or tell the computer to do something that can only be done with interaction, to do it programmatically by, you know, using AI to work with an app on their behalf. I think it's such an incredible idea. And I wouldn't be surprised if we start seeing the beginning of this implementation as part of an accessibility feature in the next version of iOS, because I think it totally makes sense to offer it as, you know, like Siri can now interact with apps for you or something like that.
What's so clever about this type of automation is that anyone potentially can do it, because it is a fallback, yeah. Right? Like when we say UI scripting, what we mean is like Keyboard Maestro can do this. You can take a screenshot and give it to Keyboard Maestro. Like when you see this on the screen, click it, right? So like, yeah. Or when a dialogue comes up with this text on it, click the OK button for me. And it opens the door to automation that otherwise there's not ways into. But also it's much friendlier to end users than something like AppleScript or even Shortcuts, right? If you can just tell it, hey, I want you to do this, this, and this, and I go and click on the mouse and tell it what I want it to do, and then it can do it for me again in the future. Like, that's very interesting. I'm really interested to see where this goes in the future.
Reuters is reporting that Apple has made a deal with Shutterstock to license their images for training data. The value of the deal was likely in the somewhere between $25 to $50 million range, according to a report, and was said to have been signed in the months following the release of ChatGPT in late 2022. They're also looking to license images from PhotoBucket as well, which is it's like one of those things that's a name I've not heard for a long time.
Yeah.
I have a memory that I've spent a lot of time today trying to find evidence of and cannot, that Apple did a deal like this before, or at least made reference to doing a deal like this before, when they were training their machine learning model to detect faces and photos and stuff, that they worked with a company like a Shutterstock, but like they licensed imagery to train that model. Because like people ask, like, how did you do it? And that was the way that they did it.
Yeah.
I couldn't find anything. These words and phrases are way too hard to Google now. Like machine learning, model training, photos, like it's too hard.
In 2017, they acquired a computer vision startup that was particularly working on searching for things within images, and that came out in iOS 11 around that time. And so maybe that's what you're thinking of, but I'm not sure.
It was specific. The thing, my memory anyway, is specifically around how they created their like person detect, like this is this person, like, or this is this thing. Anyway, doesn't matter.
If you know, send us feedback. Look, Apple's got to do this, right? If you don't pay for content to train your models, you just go off scraping it on the internet, then everyone sues you. Check in on how OpenAI is doing, right? That is something they're dealing with now. Apple doesn't want that liability, so of course they're going to go to these companies. But these companies have a complicated relationship with AI tools. I just looked at Shutterstock support stuff in preparation for this. There's kind of three big points with Shutterstock. One, they have their own generative AI tools through a partnership with OpenAI. So you can use DALL-E and other tools and within the Shutterstock system. However, they don't allow you to submit AI-generated images to their library of stock photography. And they license their stock images out to companies for AI training, like this Apple deal and potentially others. And so these companies, like, they're all really dealing with this, really trying to sort all of this out. I mean, this comes not too long after Reddit sold rights to all of its user content to Google for arguably not nearly enough money. I don't know how users of Shutterstock feel about that, but it is something that is going to continue to be in the conversation, right? Like, if stuff's just out on the internet and you make it available and you don't tell in your, you know, your robots.txt, you don't tell OpenAI and others not to crawl it, then you're effectively letting them crawl it by omission. And that's free, even though other people may be paying for it. It's all very complicated and messy. And while it's not in, on one hand, it's not that different than Google or Bing crawling the web for search results, right? This is...
I don't agree with that.
Well, it's the same, but it's also different, right? Like, it's in
because
the same...
By and large, the agreement, like the implicit agreement with Google is like, you will then send the person to me, right?
Yes, so like, and they get in trouble when they don't.
Yeah, and now it's like, we're just not going to bother sending anyone to anywhere.
Potentially. I mean, that was a big debate with Copilot and Bing and Sydney or whatever it was called that day, where, you know, they would have the sort of basically the bibliography at the end of the thing that it put together. This is where I got this information. Now,
no one's clicking those. If you've gotten the answer, why would you click a link?
Well, that's the exact thing that Google search results is in hot water for, right? They pull out information into those boxes and no one ever goes to the Yelp website ever again. Like,
yeah,
they are related.
But they don't
issues.
Do that for everything, right? They do that for certain like category types.
Yeah.
Like with the AI stuff, like they're doing it for everything. They're just giving you the entire answer. Like, anyway.
So, yeah. So Apple continues to inch in this direction of big stuff, I'm sure, coming at WWDC. I kind of expect this to be a sort of a regular segment on the show for a while as we learn more about what Apple is up to here. This episode of Connected is made possible by ExpressVPN. When you have kids, you're always on the lookout for any extra layers of security you can provide as a parent. If your kids use technology, using a VPN can help encrypt your kids' activity online. Every device, phone, computer, tablet, they all have unique IP addresses. It's essentially a number that links you to your online activity, which is fine until you click on something sketchy and risk your IP address being exposed to someone else. ExpressVPN hides your real IP address and replaces it with a dummy one, keeping your information private. And it's really easy to use. You just download the ExpressVPN app on your phone or computer, tap with code CONNECTED or PROTECTED. And ExpressVPN lets you choose the country you want your IP address to look like it's coming from. That's super useful because services like Netflix and Disney Plus give you different shows depending on where you are. So you can just switch your country to something else and get hundreds of extra shows for free. ExpressVPN is super easy to use and super fast, so you can do that streaming while on a VPN. And there's a bunch of fun stuff out there, including Tom and Jerry the Movie on Netflix Germany, a true favorite in my household. To secure your family's online activity, unlock tons of new shows by visiting expressvpn.com/connected. Use that link and you get 3 extra months for free. That's EXPRESS, expressvpn.com/connected to learn more. Our thanks to ExpressVPN for their support of the show and Relay FM. One more Apple adjacent AI story. According to the information, Johnny Ive and Sam Altman, the once and again boss at OpenAI, have officially joined forces on creating an AI hardware product. This was first reported back in the fall, but now it seems like this is now moving forward with a new company. So they're doing it. They're doing something.
Well, like last time it was like, hey, they're meeting about this thing. Maybe they're going to do something and SoftBank are interested and maybe they're going to pour a bunch of money into it, but they don't know what it's going to be yet. And they're just like playing around with it. And then Sam Altman, as you referenced, got fired and hired, which may have slowed things down a bit. Although this isn't an OpenAI product though, which is like this funny thing about Sam Altman. the way that I have read the like some reporting is like Sam Altman's involved and OpenAI may or is involved, but it's not like the OpenAI thing. It's in the same way that like Sam Altman's invested in the AI pin, the Humane pin. Like he's just putting money everywhere. Same as like there's this chip company that he's trying to start.
That may have been at the heart of his ouster at OpenAI.
Yeah. Because it wasn't OpenAI, right? Like this is his kind of thing. He's just like trying a bunch of stuff and then maybe he'll then have this second company that his first company can buy a product anyway. So Ive has been tasked with securing $1 billion in funding. I don't really know why Johnny Ive has been given this job. My expectation is it's like it's some joint venture between the two, and Sam Altman's going to raise money, and Johnny Ive's going to raise money. Mm-hmm. And also, I imagine there is a different type of person that would give Johnny Ive money to Sam Altman.
Yeah.
And vice versa. Mm-hmm. So, like, they can kind of like split and conquer that way, because Johnny Ive is apparently one of the people he's in conversations with is Laurent Powell Jobs, whose VC firm Emerson Collective would be potentially putting this money in to a Johnny Ive Johnny Ive AI pen, Johnny Ive Humane pen. But yeah, it probably is something not dissimilar to that. All of the reporting on these things is the same as the Humane thing. It's the same as the Rabbit R1, which I had a thought about this the other day. The Rabbit R1 is that red thing that looks like a Playdate.
Yeah.
Do you think Panic knew about this? Like, I know it was Teenage Engineering that did the design, right? But like, I I'm not trying to start any drama. It's just a question. I just like wondered this to myself, which is just like, I wonder if this is one of those things where like Teenage Engineering designed this thing for Panic to make the Playdate. Yeah. And then like, I wonder if like who owns the design, mm-hmm. or like who thinks they own the design.
I mean, it's very similar. It doesn't have a crank, but it has a scroll wheel.
It's a red Playdate. Like, it's a red Playdate. Like, it looks exactly the same. And I just wonder if this is one of those things where, like, they're like, oh, that looks familiar. Anyway, I don't know.
Yeah.
But all of these things are like, this is not a smartphone, right? This is not a smartphone. Could any of these things succeed? I know that's such a hard question to answer.
I'm gonna say something. I think of all these products, I think something like the Humane AI pin has more chances to succeed than the Rabbit R1. Because the Rabbit, I mean, you're still holding a screen, right?
Yeah.
And if you're holding a screen, like it's you're basically replacing holding a phone, like holding a rectangle with holding a square. Whereas I think if we go down this, like if we play along with this argument that something is going to replace the phone, it's got to be something that is always on. And so I think I'm much more intrigued by something that you strap to your clothes or something that is always on and accessible and your hands are free. That is why I'm fascinated by the AI pin and why I'm fascinated by something like the Ray-Ban glasses. You know, those are not AI, but the idea is the same. Like you have something that is always on, your hands are free, and you can still capture information around you and, you know, take photos and videos, whatever. My main issue right now with these devices is the latency and this like who's going to be at the supermarket holding a square thing, like a Playdate thing in their hands for like 20 seconds, staring at a box of cereal and be like, hey, can you get me the calories of this thing? You're gonna sit there like an idiot capturing a picture of a box where you could just grab the box and look at the calories yourself. Who's gonna do that? I genuinely have no idea.
That's actually one of the things which is in service to the Humane, right? Where you're just like, you kind of do the thing, you just carry on and it's doing its thing and you're not like staring at it like while waiting for it to do it.
Yeah. But there's still latency with the pin, right? Because it's still that processing in the cloud takes a lot of time to go up and then to process and then to come down, but at the very least it's not like a modal interaction in the sense that you're waiting with a thing in your hands for a response to come back, right? So at least it's got that going for it. So I don't know.
Question for you both: did either of you watch the second Humane video?
Yes,
I did.
The one where that is called "What is AI pin?"
Yeah.
So much better video. Way better video. Like,
Much better.
I think this video, if this was the first video, wouldn't have been ripped so bad. Like you can, honestly, you can make your own decision about whether you think it's good or bad or not, but like, it was just a better video.
Yeah. Look, if I could buy one in Italy, I would buy one. You know, of all these products, like if I could, and I cannot because it's US only, I would get one.
Especially because stopped you.
No, I literally, I cannot use it. The data plan
will not
work. But like, I am super intrigued by this idea. So many times, like, I've been in situations where like I would have taken a picture of something if it wasn't so cumbersome to like get my phone from my jeans and then, you know, there's a friction with grabbing a phone, especially if you do what I do, where in social situations, I try to keep my phone away. And so like it's in my pocket or something, or like it's in the inner pocket of my jacket, for example. Like, I try not to use my phone if I'm around people, but to have like something that either it's glasses or something that is strapped to my t-shirt, like something that was always there.
What about the Meta Ray-Bans? Have you considered those?
Look, I am actually thinking about them for this summer, if I could get them with a prescription or something.
You can get prescription lenses for them.
I know. And I think I'm going to do it for the summer. Yeah.
I could see why they're having a moment. It's like,
yeah,
that's a pair of Ray-Bans. They just look like a pair of Ray-Bans. Like, this is an easier thing to do.
Yes, put them on a fish, you know? Let's go.
Put them on a fish. Then I get the fish to ask a question.
That's right. Why am I outside of the water? What's an eclipse?
But this is also why, like, I think we discussed this like a few weeks ago, like that crazy rumor of Apple putting cameras in AirPods. Like, yeah, like that's exactly the kind of thing that I would like. Like, I'm always going out wearing AirPods, and imagine if that little thing could take a picture of what's around me or in front of me. Yes, totally. Like, that idea of let me capture an experience or a moment quickly with no interaction with the screen, I'm on board. Yeah.
But I think that I agree with the humane pin is interesting. Like, I would like to try one. I don't want to buy one. But like, I look at it and I'm like, I can understand how this could be cool if it worked well. Mm-hmm. I'm still not sure it works well. Like, I feel like I need to see other people having used it, right? Which I guess will come at some point in the not too distant future. Because they, you know, they made a video where it seemed like they didn't pay a lot of attention to it, and the thing made a bunch of mistakes. And then they made a second video where it looked more impressive, but now you know they must have paid more attention. And so, like, I feel like, you know, this is kind of like a fool me once kind of thing, where I actually now want to see somebody who, not from Humane, make a video about how it works or doesn't, right? Where if the original video would have been the first video, then I would still remain. I'm like, oh, this actually seems pretty cool. Wherever then, like, I'm not sure this works at all, or works very well, or works reliably. But the ideas that they have are interesting ones. But I think where it starts to fall apart is this, like, it does a bunch of smartphone things. It's like, yeah, but like, I know why you're doing that, but like, I don't want to have another phone number for texting people. Like, I don't want that. Mm-hmm. Like, there is all these, like, this weird stuff. And so I just kind of wonder, like, it's a question I've been asking myself when thinking about this stuff and, like, when looking at this report. Something has to replace the smartphone eventually. But how much of what a phone does is it going to need? Because smartphones replaced regular phones, right? And so there was a set of things that it needed to do. I don't know if I know what that set of things is. It's not the same set of things, I think.
Yeah.
And I don't know what that set is realistically today. And I think that's going to be whoever can come up with what that exact set of things is, plus all the new things that it can do that a smartphone can't do, or it does way better than a smartphone. Like, that's where the winner is. But I don't know what that set realistically is, or what people are willing to trade off if the other experience is so good.
Well, I think if you consider the long timeline of the future of the human race, right? Like, what's going to replace a smartphone? I think if you go down at a very basic level, like, you need to consider the primary impulses that motivate us as people. Like, why do we use smartphones? Because the phones, they help us deal with our primary impulses as a race, you know, like essentially like money, food, and sex. Like those are the primary drivers usually for people, with the general goal of this blurry concept of happiness. Like, so the way that society will evolve to accommodate those primary impulses for that goal of happiness, that's how computers will evolve, right? And so that sounds incredibly hand wavy and philosophical, and I know that, but like the smartphone was successful because it gave us a better way to deal with those things that drive us on a daily basis, right? It's a better way to get in touch with people, to order food, to get work done, make money, therefore, and chat with friends and partners. The next thing that's going to replace the phone, it's got to be better at, or preferable at, doing those things than whatever we're using now. That's the way I look at it. Like, fundamentally, we got to understand how society will change to understand what's going to replace the phone. That's how I look at it. And I think realistically, the phone is going to be with us for a long time still. Just like cars are still with us. And yeah, we're only trying to modernize cars now with EVs, but they're still cars, right? It's one of those really, truly once in a lifetime kind of inventions that, in order to be replaced, something far, far, far better needs to come along. And I'm not sure that, you know, holding a Rabbit R1 in your hands is that thing.
But if you're Sam Altman, there's no one better in the world today to partner with, right? Than Johnny Ive?
Absolutely. Yeah. He's like, the guy for it. Yeah.
I don't know if anybody has this answer, but if there's someone, like, if you have like a short list of people who might be able to get you to that answer, you have to use history as a predictor of that, because it's, what else do you have, right? Like, you can't know everyone in the world. I mean, what, you get the guy who was there for the Mac and the iPhone? Like, well, not the Mac, iMac.
The iPod,
say, right?
The iPhone, the iPod, iPad.
The iPod,
the Apple Watch.
The iPod. The iMac, the Apple Watch, AirPods. The iPhone, the iPad, AirPods, like
eMac.
What a resume that man has. You know what I'm saying? God, unbeatable. Yeah. I love Johnny Ive so much. And I just, if I was Sam Altman, I'd be like, yeah, what does he want? Like, if I'm going to give this a go, like actually going to truly give it a go, I'll give that guy whatever he wants. He might not be able to do it, but I'd put my money on him before anybody else, I think.
It is interesting. But I tend to be less positive about anything replacing the smartphone in any sort of reasonable time frame. It didn't replace the personal computer. It supplemented it. Right? It's still here. Now, some people, it's their only computer, right? But it definitely stands on the shoulders of it. I just don't know. It's really hard to beat the smartphone. People like their phones. That's something Jason says all the time in talking about these AI products. Like, people like their phones. Most people, I think a lot of people are like Federica, right? In certain settings, I don't want my phone to be with me. The Apple Watch can fill that gap for a lot of folks. But generally, people like their phones most of the time. And it's hard to beat something that's always with you, that has a great camera, great screen, fast connectivity, all of your data. It's a pretty perfect combination of things. But to your point, if someone's going to do it, maybe it's the guy who helped invent it in the first place.
Yeah.
But this is where, like, going back to what we were saying earlier about the EU, this is where, like, people in our world, in the Apple world, may have to hope that the Department of Justice has a case. Because if people like their phones, which they do, and you want something that doesn't get rid of the phone, but is an addition to the phone, like the phone was in addition to a computer, no one can make this product for an iPhone, which is why Humane's doing what it's doing. It's why Rabbit's doing what it's doing. Because if you want to work with the iPhone, you cannot integrate with the iPhone because you're not Apple. They won't let you. And so this is that thing, right? Like the Apple Watch argument, which, you know, make of it what you will. Like, but there are elements to it which is true, right? Where like, Johnny Ive and Sam Altman cannot make a product that can integrate with what's on your iPhone. Should they be able to? I don't know, but Apple can. If they want to.
Yeah. Well, that does it for this week. If you want to find links to the stories we spoke about, check out your podcast player. They're also on the web at relay.fm/connected/497. While you're there, you can submit feedback or follow up. You can make that anonymous if you like. You can also become a member and get Connected Pro, which is the longer and ad-free version of the show we do each and every week. So it's an extra topic, it's no ads, and you also get a bunch of cool stuff from Relay, including access to the members' Discord, a couple of members-only podcasts, a newsletter. It is an awesome deal. We'd love to have your support. So go sign up there on the website. If you want to find us online, we're hanging around. You can find Mike at a bunch of other shows here on Relay FM and his work at Cortex Brand. You can follow Mike on Mastodon as iMike and Mike.social and as iMike, I-M-Y-K-E, on Threads. Federico is the editor-in-chief of MacStories.net. You can follow him on Mastodon as Vitici, V-I-T-I-C-C-I, Vitici at MacStories.net, and just Vitici on Threads. You can find me on Mac Power Users here on Relay each and every Sunday. I'm ISMH86 on Threads and ISMH at eWorld.social on Mastodon. I'd like to thank our sponsors this week for making the show possible, Jam, Ecamm, and ExpressVPN. More information about them is also in the show notes. And until next time, guys, say goodbye.
Arrivederci.
Cheerio.
Bye, y'all.